Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Katie Weaver and Brian Lynn. Ann Ball will tell us what's trending today, and later, Pete Musto and John Russell will bring us this week's lesson in everyday grammar. But first, Senator John McCain has brain cancer. McCain, 80, is a Republican who lost the 2008 presidential election to Democrat Barack Obama. He is considered a war hero from his service in the Vietnam War. His office and the Mayo Clinic Hospital in Phoenix, Arizona, provided the medical information about McCain on Wednesday night. McCain was diagnosed with glioblastoma, an aggressive form of cancer. It forms tumors in the brain and spinal cord, according to the American Brain Tumor Association. The American Cancer Society estimates that people who develop glioblastoma after the age of 55 have a 5-year survival rate of 4%. McCain's Senate office said the senator is in good spirits as he continues to recover from surgery at his Arizona home. Praise for McCain came from leaders of both political parties. Former President Obama tweeted, "John McCain is an American hero and one of the bravest fighters I've ever known. Cancer doesn't know what it's up against. Give it hell, John." Republican President Donald Trump, who once questioned whether McCain was really a war hero, also offered best wishes. "Senator John McCain has always been a fighter. Melania and I send our thoughts and prayers to Senator McCain, Cindy, and their entire family. Get well soon." Before entering politics, McCain was a Navy fighter pilot. He was imprisoned and tortured by the North Vietnamese for 5 years after his plane was shot down. McCain refused the North Vietnamese offers to leave early from a prison known as the Hanoi Hilton. McCain said he would not leave unless fellow American prisoners of war were also released. When McCain was finally released in 1973, he was badly injured and weakened. In 1982, McCain was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. 4 years later, he was elected to the Senate. McCain has survived other health issues, including melanoma, the most dangerous form of skin cancer. He also faced a variety of health problems caused by his 5 years of imprisonment in Vietnam. His daughter, Megan, said her father is demonstrating his usual strength and bravery. "It won't surprise you to learn that in all this, the one of us who is most confident and calm is my father," she said. "He is the toughest person I know." McCain's office said his doctors will decide when he can return to the Senate. A lengthy absence will make it more difficult for the Trump administration and Republican congressional leaders to pass bills. Republicans had already delayed a vote on eliminating and replacing the health law known as Obamacare. The delay was announced after McCain had surgery last week to remove a blood clot from behind his left eye. On Wednesday night, the Mayo Clinic and the Arizona Republican's office announced McCain's diagnosis of a brain tumor. McCain's doctors said the senator's next treatment may include a combination of chemotherapy and radiation. Republican Senator Jeff Flake also represents the state of Arizona. He found out about the cancer during a telephone discussion with McCain. Only at the end of the conversation, I asked him how he was feeling today, and he said, "I'm feeling fine, but I might have some chemotherapy in my future," Flake said on ABC television. "And that's how I learned of it, so it was almost in passing about his diagnosis." Flake went on to say that McCain sounded optimistic. "He's John McCain. That's what we expect," Flake said.
A national strike called by Venezuela's opposition Thursday brought much of the country to a halt. Opponents of President Nicolas Maduro called the 24-hour strike. The opposition groups want to show national disapproval for Maduro's plan to rewrite Venezuela's constitution. It was the first major strike in Venezuela since 2002, when the opposition tried unsuccessfully to oust former President Hugo Chavez. The action appeared to have stopped nearly all bus traffic across the capital, Caracas. Many private businesses were closed, even though the government demanded that they stay open. Government-run companies remained open, but some had limited services because many employees did not show up for work. Some people noted that the opposition action would cost them money at a time of extreme economic crisis and food shortages. Many others said it was important to show support for the cause. Several groups set up roadblocks in areas across Caracas to show opposition to Maduro's rule. A collection of groups oppose Maduro's proposal to create a new legislative body to rewrite the country's 1999 constitution. It would also have the power to dissolve state institutions. Maduro has set a July 30th vote to create the body. The opposition has accused Maduro of seeking to build up the proposed new legislature with his supporters. They say this would permit him to remove the few remaining checks on his power and create a Cuba-style system controlled by his Socialist Party. The opposition wants the military to defend the current constitution. It has also demanded new elections before Maduro's term ends in early 2019. The strike came after more than 7 million Venezuelans voted last weekend in an unofficial referendum. In the opposition-organized vote, 98% rejected Maduro's proposal to rewrite the Constitution. The referendum was seen as symbolic because it was not part of an official government election. Maduro dismissed the voting as unconstitutional. He said it would have no effect on the government or his proposals. On Monday, American President Donald Trump also spoke against the proposal. In a statement, Trump said, "If the Maduro regime imposes its Constituent Assembly on July 30th, the United States will take strong and swift economic actions." Anti-government unrest over the past 4 months has left almost 100 people dead and 1,500 injured. I'm Katie Weaver.
One of the latest trends in technology is the creation of personal robots to help people with day-to-day activities. Some companies are testing driverless robots to bring food and other products directly to customers. One such service is already operating on the streets of Washington, D.C. Starship Technologies launched several self-driving robotic vehicles in the city earlier this year. The six-wheeled electric machine sits about a half meter high. It has a box to carry small groceries or food products up to 9 kilograms in weight. Users can order the robot service through an app, a software program, on a smartphone. The food or other things remain safe and secure inside the vehicle until the consumer orders the app to open the compartment. The robotic vehicles move themselves along sidewalks using camera and tracking technology to avoid people, cars, and other objects. Each robot has lights and a red flag on top to help people recognize them. Someone is always following the robot's movements from a distance. The company admits that someone might try to steal or block the robots, but it adds that such an individual would be easy to catch because of the machine's cameras and tracking system. Another company, Dispatch, also has been testing a delivery robot. This robot is a little taller than the one working in Washington. The door of the dispatch is on the side of the robot and slides up to open the compartment. It operates along city sidewalks or the edge of streets. In April, another business launched a robotic delivery service in San Francisco, California. Marble is partnering with the food delivery company Yelp Eat 24 to provide door-to-door robot service. The marble robot is somewhat bigger than the others and has a more industrial look. But it works the same way. Orders are placed through an app, the machine makes the autonomous delivery, and a computer code is used to unlock the goods. Marble is looking to expand its delivery service from San Francisco to other cities. It also plans to offer the ability to change conditions inside the compartment from hot and cold or cold to hot, depending on what is being carried. A company in China has taken robot delivery to the extreme by putting a whole mini-market on wheels. The creators of MobiMart say they have invented the world's first self-driving supermarket. Engineers from Swedish company Himelify worked with a team from China's Hefei University of Technology on the project. Another partner is Sweden's Wheelies, which owns many movable coffee stands. MobiMart is about the size of a small bus. It offers many products found in most convenience stores. They include milk, lunch meats, fruits, and medicine. The service has been tested in the city of Shanghai in recent months. Designers say that when fully operational, MobiMart will use electricity powered by the sun. People enter their location through an app, and the vehicle then drives itself to the location and stops. A customer then enters a code to enter the mini market and chooses the desired items. Goods are scanned by phone and paid for through the app. The company has said the cost of building MobiMart is less than $100,000, about one-tenth the cost of a traditional store. Another robot could be used in the future to deliver beer and other drinks. For this purpose, researchers at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, created vehicles they are calling BeerBots. The system is actually a team of robots programmed to serve customers at a bar or restaurant. One big robot gathers cans of beer, which it places into smaller, four-wheeled robots. These turtle bots autonomously make the drink deliveries and take orders. The MIT researchers used artificial intelligence to try to get the robots to reason on their own. The idea is to have them use human-like thinking to provide the best service. The team found the BeerBots had problems reacting to difficult situations, just like humans would. But the researchers were surprised by other AI successes. They are continuing to find new ways to use reasoning methods in other robot applications. I'm Brian Lynn.
The hit summer dance song, Despacito, has become the most streamed song of all time. It now has more than 4.6 billion plays across major streaming services. It passed Justin Bieber's 2015 song, Sorry, this week, to break the all-time record. Puerto Rican singer Luis Fonsi and rap singer Daddy Yankee released Despacito in January. They later released a version that included Justin Bieber.
The remixed song helped increase its popularity in several English-speaking countries, including the United States. Despacito, which means slowly in Spanish, is also now the most successful Spanish-language pop song of all time. The chief of Universal Music Group, Lucien Grange, released a statement about Despacito's success. It said, "Streaming has opened up the possibility of a song with a different beat from a different culture and in a different language to become a juggernaut of success around the world." Fonsi is 39 years old. Until Despacito, he was not well known outside of Puerto Rico, a U.S. territory. It is the first mostly Spanish song to reach the top of the Billboard's Hot 100 list in the U.S. since the 1996 summer hit Macarena. Despacito has been the top song this year in more than 30 countries worldwide. Also this week, officials in Malaysia banned broadcasts of Despacito on government-run radio and television. Malaysia's communications minister said the government acted in answer to public protest that the words in the song are offensive. The ban, however, does not extend to private stations, YouTube, or music streaming services. When the new record was announced this week, Fonsi gave credit to streaming services for helping his music reach every part of the planet. And that's what's trending today. I'm Ann Ball.
Comedian George Carlin is famous for talking about language. He is famous for criticizing indirect or overly pleasant speech. Consider these lines from one of his performances.
"I don't like words that hide the truth. I don't like words that conceal reality. I don't like euphemisms or euphemistic language. And American English is loaded with euphemisms because Americans have a lot of trouble dealing with reality."
Today, we will explore the case of euphemisms, pleasant or nice words that take the place of direct language. We will give you examples of euphemisms and explain why they are so common.
In earlier everyday grammar stories, we discussed how Americans sometimes choose indirect speech. They consider it to be more polite. What takes the place of direct speech? Americans often replace it with creative noun phrases, phrasal verbs, or expressions. These words give the same basic meaning as direct language, but they have a very different style. Americans often use euphemisms when talking about sensitive topics. Death, love, body processes, anything they might not want to speak of directly. Here is an example. Consider the noun alcohol. Alcohol consumption can be a taboo topic in American society. So, some restaurants and stores sell adult beverages instead. The term adult beverages is a euphemism. It refers to alcohol, but in an indirect manner.
You might think that euphemisms are very informal or slang. You might think that euphemisms are silly. But Americans often use euphemisms when talking about serious issues, death, for one. Consider the verb die. In euphemistic language, Americans often replace it with the phrasal verb pass away. When expressing news about a person's death, Americans might say, I was sad to hear that so-and-so passed away. Americans often send condolence cards to those who have lost friends or family. These condolence cards often do not use the verb die. Instead, they use euphemistic or indirect language. Here is another example. Instead of saying euthanize or even kill, Americans might say put to sleep. Put to sleep sounds much gentler and kinder than euthanize or kill. Parents often use this structure when a child's beloved pet needs to be euthanized by a veterinarian. The reason they do this is to avoid making the child sadder about the situation.
Euphemisms are not always used to talk about sensitive topics. Sometimes business people create euphemisms to increase sales. Consider this example. If you were to ask Americans if they would like to eat Patagonian toothfish, they would probably say no. Toothfish just does not sound like an appealing food to eat. However, if you were to ask Americans if they would like to eat Chilean sea bass, they might say yes. The two names refer to the exact same kind of fish. Ralph Keyes is an author. He wrote Euphemania, a book about euphemisms. In an interview with NPR, Keyes noted that, at one time, Patagonian toothfish was freely available to anyone because no one wanted to eat it, until a very clever entrepreneurial sea importer renamed it Chilean sea bass. Now, you will see Chilean sea bass on menus at expensive restaurants. The lowly toothfish has come a long way.
Euphemisms often make sentences longer. They can also take away clarity, especially in writing. For these reasons, writing style guides often recommend that writers not use euphemisms or indirect language. Whether you like euphemisms or not, you should learn some of the common ones. They play a part in American culture, for better or for worse. The next time you are watching a film, listening to music, or reading the news, try to look for euphemistic language. Ask yourself why the speaker or writer might want to use a euphemism instead of direct language. We will leave you with a euphemism from the 2004 comedy Anchorman. Actor Will Ferrell is expressing surprise. Instead of using bad or offensive words, he refers to Odin, a character in Norse mythology. Americans do not use this expression. They rarely refer to Norse mythology. That is part of the humor of the line.
Oh, great Odin's raven!
I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm John Russell.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.